Hey, this is Chris, and I am back with the 19th episode of Tiki Chris Talks. And I am at Cinnamon Kitchen, Devonshire Square, in, close to Liverpool Street here in London. And I'm with one of my favorite chefs in London, and one whose career I've been following for about as long as I've been writing about food.
Right.
And that is Chef Vivek Singh. Thank you so much.
Hey, Chris. Hey.
Yes. So I know you're a busy man, so we're going to keep this pretty quick. But basically, I just want to say thank you, first of all, let's run through your restaurants.
Absolutely. A pleasure. Pleasure. Anytime.
The newest one. So you've got 5 restaurants now, is that correct?
6, yeah. 6. As of today, yeah. 6.
Okay. All right, wow.
The Cinnamon Club in Westminster is where it all started, in the old Westminster Library. That was way back in 2001. And then, in 2008 we opened this place, housed in the former spice warehouses of the East India Company. Can you imagine?
Okay, yeah.
This is where we are, the Cinnamon Kitchen in Devonshire Square by Liverpool Street. And incidentally, we are celebrating 10 years of Cinnamon Kitchen this year. At some point last year, I said, look, we're going to be celebrating 10 years. And I didn't want to just have the one Cinnamon Kitchen, because this is the one we've done with a view to open more.
Okay.
Yeah. And even though we opened Cinnamon Soho in 2012 and Cinnamon Bazaar on Maiden Lane in 2016, mm-hmm. I said, well, we hadn't done more Cinnamon Kitchens. So we went on and opened the Cinnamon Kitchen in Oxford on the Westgate.
Oh, right. Wow.
In the Westgate development on the rooftop. Amazing views of Oxford from there in October.
In October.
Yeah, in October last year. And we just most recently opened another one of my real sort of favorites when it comes to locations, mm-hmm. is the Cinnamon Kitchen in the Battersea Power Station.
Yes.
Which, an absolutely iconic setting.
Yes.
You know?
Mm. One of probably my favorite structure in London, actually. My favorite big building. I remember from an old Pink Floyd album.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, yeah.
Cover, yeah. But so I was there, I guess maybe it was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, probably.
It was delicious. Before we get to how delicious it is, how do you differentiate between, say, Cinnamon Club and the Cinnamon Kitchen, and the menus at the different?
Yeah, the menus are, I think the menus are a bit more free flow, really. I mean, it's more, we focus more on the expression, the language, or the ethos, rather than the exact same dishes in each of the restaurants or the menus. So, for example, you know, the core of the ethos of our cooking is taking traditional Indian spicing and traditional Indian cooking techniques and combining that with the very best local seasonal produce that money can buy. And so in that sense, that ethos of innovation, of creativity, of pushing boundaries, that runs the same through all our restaurants and all our menus.
Sure.
Whether it's a £120 a head Cinnamon Club, or it's a £60 a head Cinnamon Kitchen, or it's a £30 a head Cinnamon Bazaar, that expression remains the same. How the dishes manifest themselves are slightly different. So we may use a different cut of meat, or we may use a different mince, or we may use something which is, you know, a lot more seasonal. And but I mean, that's how the language kind of remains the same, but the dishes are not necessarily the same. We don't believe in cookie cutter menus the same as, so every restaurant has one or two dishes that were created specifically for there and that they've become famous for, or their love for those dishes.
And what would those be at the new Battersea Cinnamon Kitchen?
So there are a couple of things there. I think the one is the Keema Litti. It's a lamb mince filled inside a dough ball, really, and it's cooked on this sort of open fire spit. And it's fast, rapidly approaching, a sort of a status for a classic dish very quickly. It's one of those things. So that's a new one there. And then the bar menu at Battersea is actually very interesting. So inspired by the railway arches that we are housed in, because right above us, every 5 or 10 minutes, you have the trains going over, and it creates a rumbling noise, and very much reminds me of the train journeys that one would undertake as a child back in India. Long train journeys, 24 hours, 36 hours, and the food just changes with every station and all that. So the bar menu at Battersea Power Station is very interesting. It draws its inspiration from six stops along the Mumbai to Jaipur Pink City Express,
okay.
And it picks up a dish from each of the cities, and it's expressed, on the bar menu. So, which is quite an interesting idea.
Oh, I love that. Well, speaking of bars, you've now, as to my knowledge, have teamed up with two of London's biggest bartenders.
Oh, absolutely,
so
yeah.
You've got Ryan Chete
Vardhana,
yeah.
Okay. Mr. Lion.
From Mr. Lion. A little easier, at Cinnamon Bazaar.
Correct.
And also at the new Battersea restaurant, you've teamed up with Tony.
Yeah.
Contigliare.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, these guys are huge.
Absolutely.
So, is that an integral thing now as you develop your concepts?
Yes, absolutely right. I mean, I think, you know, it's never about, restaurant experiences are so much more than what they used to be. It isn't just about food, isn't just about pretty spaces. People think of food, people think of drink, and people think of good service as integral to any good restaurant experience. But I find that there is so much more room to collaborate, and there's absolutely space for a lot more interaction and a lot more collaborations than we have seen in the past. As long as you're collaborating with people who are like-minded and have similar values of excellence, and they're considered to be authorities in their own right. And both these names are great names,
yeah,
for them. And I'm really delighted to be working with them. I think it brings in a different level of drink making and creativity. And makes the product a lot more textured and really interesting, I think.
Well, it's great. Yeah, cocktails have both been fantastic. So you mentioned these railway journeys you take as a child. You grew up in Eastern India.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. I grew up about 200 kilometers west of Kolkata, Calcutta, in the old days, in a railway town. So yeah, yeah. We used to take lots of trains. I mean, actually, that's how you used to travel then.
And food was a huge part of your childhood?
Food was always a big part of, not just my childhood. In fact, for most Indian families, I think, or certainly at the time when I was growing up, food was amazing. It was big, more than any of us really appreciated at the time. There was so much cooking and pretty much every mealtime,
okay.
You know.
Okay. Did you know from an early age you wanted to be involved with?
No idea. I just sort of, drifted in into this and fell into a really happy place at the right time. And it's just kind of, it's as much a case of the profession choosing me as me choosing the vocation.
Okay.
I went and did hotel school, didn't know what I wanted to be, or particularly wanted to be a chef. But then ended up doing this and loving it. Loved it so much I wanted to continue and not stop. So
right, yeah.
There we are, 25 years on.
Well, once you got into being cooking and liked that as a career, did you have your, this was in India still, I
guess,
but did you have your mind set on coming to London or?
Not really, no. I'd worked for about, trained and worked in India for about 8 years before I came to the UK. It wasn't like I was looking for an opportunity to go abroad. I mean, I was in a really good place in a really good hotel group.
You had established a name
yourself. An amazing setting. I suppose life has its own ways, you know. The opportunity presented itself, and it was a huge, huge sort of opportunity.
Cinema Club.
The Cinnamon Club, yeah, correct. It was a blank canvas that I could have painted with anything. And in terms of expression, putting together a menu of your own, I could not have thought of a better opportunity than that.
Sure.
So it kind of, you know, really happened really well. And as far as
What year?
This was late 1999. I beg your pardon. It was 2000. So earlier spring of 2000 to 2000. Autumn. So about 6 months. As an opportunity goes, this was amazing. But more importantly, when I was, when it presented itself and I looked at what was happening, early days of the internet, you can imagine, looked at what was happening in London, I realized that, there was an amazing level of affection, understanding and appreciation for Indian food. So in many ways, it was, the platform was set because you didn't have to teach people what a chicken tikka or a naan bread was, so it was amazing. And wasn't the case of introducing people to Indian food because they already knew it and loved it. So that was a really good opportunity. I looked at New York, I looked at London, and I also had opportunities from a really small place in Belgium, Antwerp.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and I, you know, I kind of looked at all three and I said, well, no, London any day. And okay. I've never regretted that decision.
Yeah, I love it here too. But I'm guessing, yes, I'm sure, this is about a year before my time in London, before I moved here.
Yeah.
But I know there was a good understanding of and appreciation for South Asian cuisine.
Yeah.
But maybe you were among the first, anyway, if not the first, to really come with a modern, fresh approach.
Correct.
And, yeah, I mean, I guess we could list a lot of restaurants that came after you.
Yeah.
And now it's a whole new world. Do you see
absolutely.
These changes as positive?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think you know, the way I see it is there was a lot of love, there was a lot of understanding, there was a lot of affection for Indian food, appreciation for it. I don't think there was any ambition.
Okay.
As far as the operators were concerned. Oh, yeah, there wasn't any ambition. There wasn't really a case of anybody trying to revolutionize or challenge people's perception. Correct, you know. I don't think we were, as chefs or as restaurateurs, really pushing the boat out, trying to give people a new experience. I think we were quite sort of nice and cozy and comfortable in our own cocoons at the time, seemed like. So in that sense, the Cinnamon Club was an absolute sort of exercise in audacity, you know, for want of a better description.
Sure.
It was a restaurant that challenged every preconceived notion about that people may have had. Dark, dingy, small, you know, musty rooms. No, this was large, grand, and a beautiful setting of the old Westminster Library.
Incredible setting.
You know, background sitar music and flock wallpaper. None of any of that stuff, you know. Images of the tiger, the snake man, the snake charmer, and the elephant, and the Raj, and the Taj Mahal. No, anything but, you know.
Yeah.
So it was an idea that believed that there was so much more that was possible with Indian food. And the way
focus
that we...
on the food more than
trappings? Yeah, correct. So the trappings aside, you know, the food itself, the menu was much shorter. It almost read like produce list of the finest British seasonal produce that you could buy. It probably had the first main course in an Indian restaurant priced at over £20.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, you know, because we use the finest fish, you know.
Yeah.
In the first couple of years,
you
I used.
Blink at that now.
Oh yeah, you don't blink at that now at all. But you know, at the time,
I'm always blinking.
No, you're right. I mean, you know, at the time, to have a starter north of £10 and to have a main course north of £20 was considered to be absolute harakiri, professional harakiri. You know, so why nobody spends? People, my earliest response was, you know, people spend that on an entire meal, not on a dish. Chef, you've got something wrong. But, you know, I realized if I wanted to use good ingredients, then I had to charge what it cost to, you know, to be able to make it work. And I was surprised that nobody even balked.
Okay.
You know, because people who were picking wild Madagascan prawns or halibut on the menu or a rump of Kentish lamb or a tandoori breast of grouse, they understood and appreciated that these things cost money. And it worked absolutely fine. I mean, now I think seasonal dishes and good local seasonal produce is almost considered de rigueur, you know, it's the norm now.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, we're incredibly proud that the Cinnamon Club at the time kind of led the charge. And now we see a whole new breed of Indian restaurants. That's just such an exciting phenomena.
Do you eat out?
Oh, a lot, yeah.
You got any favorites?
Different one, all the time. Are you talking about Indian restaurants, non-Indian restaurants, London restaurants, anywhere? You know?
However you want to answer, actually. where do you eat? Where do chefs like to eat? That's always
I don't know. I mean, it depends on which part of town I'm in. I rarely find the opportunity to go back to the same restaurant again and again.
Okay, yeah.
If I've been back to a restaurant three times, it's a huge, you know, sign of respect. And I can say, well, I've been to Roka several times. I mean, you know, I love Roka, what they do with Japanese food. And I thought it was quite groundbreaking then, and it continues to be so even now. Incredibly great energy, great vibe. Love the drinks. I often find myself tucking into a Mirch Masala if I'm in Tooting or Croydon way, you know. Looking for a really sort of an honest, gutsy Indian cooking, you know. Of the new breed of Indian restaurants, I love Tully Joe on Shaftesbury.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I love Azma's cooking in Darjeeling Express, and it's an amazing setup.
Great. All right. Well, I would just like to say now let's get to the deliciousness of your food. You mentioned the wild African prawns, I think, the Madagascar prawns. The grilled wild African prawn at Cinnamon Kitchen Battersea is amazing. The clove-smoked lamb rump, amazing. Yeah. And one that I was just trying, and it blew me away, was the mussel and date. Malabar mussel and date pickle.
That's a new one there.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Just delicious, yeah. So are these just, you're coming up with ideas?
All the time.
Okay.
You know, all the time. You constantly, you could be in a bus, you could be reading something, watching something, you come up with an idea, put a note in, and then when you get the opportunity to be in the kitchen next, you go and play with it. So you know, I always run off a kind of almost like a working list of ideas that have never seen the light of the day. And there's always, you know, whenever you're looking to write a new menu, and quite often I find either, you know, what helps is a sense of context or a sense of season. So the grills are quite an integral part of the Cinnamon Kitchen experience.
Yes.
These open grills, they not just exude warmth, but they bring in that level of interaction and theater and the element of sharing.
All places have open kitchens.
All our Cinnamon Kitchens have
all
open
kitchens,
Because, you know, the interaction and the theater and the warmth and the, you know, the expression of Cinnamon Kitchen is quite something else. It's about openness. It's not about magic happening behind closed doors and messy and dirty kitchens. It's about having no secrets, or no secrets that we don't want people to know of anyways. So anything you want, you know, you can learn how do you spice that piece of fish, and the chef will be very happy to show you, do it in front of you, put it on a piece of grill, put that piece of fish on a grill and cook it, you know, live right in front of your very eyes. And we find that really does break down the barriers. It brings in a new level of appreciation for how real the cooking is, how real time, how fresh the ingredients are, and the love and the care that goes into the sourcing. I mean, actually, it's all the things that you want people to see, not to hide behind closed doors.
And how do you, are you bouncing around to all your restaurants all the time?
Oh, yes. No, I love to spend time with the kitchen teams and with the overall teams in each of the restaurants. So yeah, my week can be very fluid. And some days I can find myself in three different restaurants in the same day.
And do you make it back to India to see what's happening there for food much often?
No, I go back to India quite a lot, sometimes two times a year, sometimes three. But rarely ever to look for ideas, because I think you come across things when you're not necessarily looking for them.
Right.
I don't look for inspiration because that's not how I, you know, I may see something in new light, but it's usually, I don't think there is that much innovation-wise or experimentation-wise happening in India.
Okay.
So whilst you may discover new things, as in something that you may not have experienced before, but I don't think it's down to experimentation. It's most likely because it's such a massive country. You may not have come across something or a style of dish, but you know, I like to enjoy it for what it is.
Okay. Wow. Well, what's next?
What's next?
Yes.
Well, just come out of the last cookbook that came out in June.
Okay.
So I think it's, you know, it's coming up to to actually its first full year, and I think I need about 12 to 18 months to recover from a book to start thinking about the next.
So, given
my two restaurant openings have happened in the last 6 months, mm-hmm. I'm giving myself another 6 months before I start working on another book.
Okay. Mm-hmm. More restaurants in the pipeline?
Yes, watch this space.
Okay, all right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. And if people want to find out more, can they go online, Cinnamon Kitchen?
Oh, yes, they can go online, cinnamon-kitchen.com or cinnamonclub.com or my own website where a lot of the news is posted. It's viveksingh.co.uk.
Okay, very cool. Well, Chef, thank you so much. It's a real honor. You have provided me with some of the tastiest meals since I moved back to London in 2006. So it's
been a pleasure, Chris.
To chat with you. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.